Stay tuned now for Dr. Steven Zelikoff and a program you will not want to miss. Bone Talk. That's Bone Talk with Dr. Steven Zelikoff on 1460 WVOX.
Welcome, everybody, and happy holidays to all. Thanks for joining us on another episode of Bone Talk. Today, we're going to be talking about the role of pain management in the treatment of musculoskeletal pain. We're very, very lucky to have our guest today, Dr. Craig Shalmy. Dr. Shalmy is a pain management specialist. Welcome, Craig.
Good morning. Thank you.
So happy to have you. Basically, the whole concept of discussing pain management, my role as an orthopedic surgeon is I have a lot of patients that come in with both acute and chronic pain, and oftentimes surgery isn't the right answer for them, and we look into alternatives in terms of keeping them comfortable. And a lot of times they'll say, well, why don't you go ahead and see a pain management specialist? And many of my patients aren't really sure what that means, if it means more drugs, more medications, things of that. So I'm hoping that we can sort of touch base a little bit on what pain management actually is and what the role of the pain management specialist is. But before I get into that, I would like to just mention that we're really, really lucky to have Dr. Shalmy on our show today. He earned his MD degree from the Albert Einstein College of Medicine, did postgraduate training in anesthesia and critical care at Harvard, as well as a fellowship in pain management. Beyond his credentials, I've been working with him for years, and besides being an amazing physician, he's also incredibly empathetic, and I know that patients love him, and I know that he's made a lot of people with really, really tough problems a lot more comfortable and a lot happier. His office is at 550 Mamaroneck Avenue, and his website, if you want to reach him, is cshalmi, that's C-S-H-A-L-M-I, at treatingpain.com. So, again, Craig, welcome, and just tell us a little about what a pain management physician is and what is pain management.
Well, again, thanks so much for having me on, Steve. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about pain management. It's a very important question. What exactly is a pain specialist and what is pain management? Because there's a lot of misconceptions about it. One thing that pain management is not is sort of the practice of last resort, okay? We're part and parcel of the overall care of patients that have problems with function and problems with pain, but it's not where you come and get a prescription for narcotics. That's a very small piece of what we do. There are instances where that kind of treatment is appropriate, but by and large nowadays, that's been largely supplanted by many other modalities to help patients with painful conditions and with functional problems. One definition, if you actually seek out a definition for pain management, one that you might find is that pain management is a multidisciplinary approach for easing suffering and improving the quality of lives of those that live with chronic pain. Another definition that I also like, because it has some other aspects of it that I think are important. One is that it's a rapidly growing medical specialty. When I started in this specialty nearly 30 years ago, it was crickets out there. I think one of the earlier people to get into it. It wasn't nearly as popular a specialty, and it was greatly misunderstood. And that's changing a lot over these last decades. The other part of the definition is that, we're using a multidisciplinary approach to treat all kinds of pain. It's not really just chronic pain. And as you said earlier, sometimes you have patients that have acute pain problems, even postoperative issues. So we do treat patients that have had recent trauma, patients that have acute postoperative pain. And then within the realm of chronic pain, which is generally agreed upon as being pain that lasts 3 months or longer, it's somewhat arbitrary. But there are some important neurological changes that happen after 3 months that actually change the nature of pain. So we deal with, and I like to tell patients, this is not just about pain management. It's about functional improvement. In some regards, I would almost rather have a patient that I've been working with out there enjoying life, doing things they want to do, having their function preserved and maintained, and deal with a bit of pain than have somebody who really is just on the sofa most of the day watching TV with no pain. So it's about It's about functional restoration and maintenance, and also about trying to reduce pain to levels that are at least tolerable, that allow patients to go and live the life they want to live.
And pain is such a subjective component in terms of, you know, every one of our patients perceives pain and limitations very, very differently. I've got patients that have a huge amount of arthritic changes in their joints, for instance, and they kind of get by and they're working. And, you know, if you ask them if it limits them, they're sort of like, meh, you know, I sort of find that it gets in the way a little bit. And I've got people with small little injuries that just really, really perceive pain significantly more greatly. And it doesn't make people soft. It doesn't make them weak. It just means that your body perceives it very differently. I also think that, you know, there's different types of pain that people tend to have. I mean, one is the pain that if you smack your knee into a ledge or a piece of wood or something, and it's painful and it hurts and it lasts for a period of time. And then there's that chronic nerve pain that people tend to get with shingles and things like that, which are more searing, burning type pains, which are much more difficult to sort of treat. And I'm sure that you've had a lot of experience in terms of separating out these two in terms of how to manage them and how to get them back to their function.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. There are many different kinds of pains that people experience, and the way we experience pain is very different. Even if you take one type of pain, somebody's pain score of say a 5, we usually score pains on a 0 to 10 scale, 0 being no pain and 10 being the worst imaginable. The scale in and of itself isn't all that useful. It's really how it changes for an individual person. So somebody who starts out with an 8 and winds up at a 6 may be perfectly happy with that. They might be thrilled that their pain is decreased to that amount. It's really the change in the pain score, and it's what the patient's perception of the pain is. We deal with, you brought up a good example before, you smack your knee or your shin on a coffee table, and this causes you acute pain. Pain is the body's it's our pain sensing system is what keeps us alive in sort of an environment that is fraught with potential dangers. So pain is something that it's our early warning system, and it's important that we have it. Chronic pain is different. In chronic pain, the neurological system actually begins to change in ways that are maladaptive, and the pain takes on a life of its own. If it's left untreated long enough, the neurological pathway of that pain is established, and it becomes much more difficult to extinguish. Even if the original source of pain is no longer even present, the pathway itself can stay alive for months or years or for a lifetime. This can happen classically in something like shingles, which is something you mentioned earlier. It's important to treat something like that early on because, again, once the chronic state develops, much more difficult to deal with.
It's interesting you say that because one of the things that we've found in people with arthritis, for instance, is that the sense is that people would say, like, you know, hold off on surgery, hold off on treatment until you can't stand it anymore. And oftentimes these patients would come in and they'd be very limited, very functionally weak, and very functionally held back because of the chronic pain, the limitation of function. And because of that, it takes them so much longer to get back to a normal lifestyle afterwards, whereas people that tend to get treated earlier on in the process before they develop chronic pain, before they develop a lot of secondary issues in terms of weakness, atrophy, muscle loss, tend to do really so much better. So I think that, you know, when you are having a problem and you are finding that you're developing limitations either because of pain, limitation of motion, limitation of function, I think it's so important to seek help early before that pain goes from being sort of an acute issue to one that becomes chronic and becomes much, much more difficult to manage. Now, one of the biggest problems that I think that, you know, my patients tend to have is that when I mention to them that they need to go to pain management is the concept and the concerns about opiates. I know that we've been living with an opiate epidemic, and I think that this is something that's on everybody's mind. It's really been an issue both politically. It's been an issue in terms of governmental regulations and in terms of our prescribing patterns. Can you talk a little bit about that? And, you know, is this something that's slowing down? And how do you as a pain management specialist sort of work within the confines of this developing epidemic?
Yeah, it's a very important and interesting point that you bring up. The opiate epidemic's been with us now for a long time. Since 99, this is an epidemic that's killed about 500,000 Americans, drug overdose from overuse of opiates. And one question that people ask me frequently, is it easing? Is it slowing down? And I'd like to say that it is, but to be honest with you, if we're hearing less about it, it has more to do that it's been somewhat overshadowed by COVID. And in fact, COVID, if anything, has accelerated drug overdoses in this country. We are just marking for 2021 over 100,000 more deaths in this country from drug overdose this year. That is a shocking number. So, no, it's still with us, and it doesn't seem to be showing any signs of letting up. There's a lot of reasons that this has happened. There's a lot of finger pointing, a lot of places to place blame. But the fact of the matter is, these are serious medications, narcotic medications, opiates in particular, are very serious medications, and they have to be followed and monitored very carefully by the physicians that prescribe them. There has to be very close oversight of patients that are on these things, and they shouldn't be prescribed by anyone who isn't prepared to take on that responsibility. In pain management, we sign medication agreements with patients that at least provide a set of guidelines, some expectations that we have of the patient, that they're going to use the medications as they're prescribed, that they're not going to seek them elsewhere. We do provide for urine toxicology from time to time to make sure that what we're prescribing is there. There is a subset of patients for whom these medications are valuable, but the fact is that since we've turned on the spigot back in the mid-1990s, the more advanced research that have been done really has not been able to demonstrate any long-term benefit for the use of high-grade narcotic medications in the treatment of chronic pain. They're still useful in acute pain, no doubt. They're useful for post-operative pain. They're useful for trauma. But over the long term, there's a very small segment of patients that do well without developing problems with addiction, dependency, tolerance, and ineffectiveness of the medication. There's a small group of patients that continue to get fairly good relief over the long term with stable doses of medications. Beyond that, they've really fallen out of favor in the use of chronic pain.
Now, for patients, we tend to, when I do surgery, we've really changed the way that, you know, I prescribe post-operative pain medications. I mean, I'll usually give people medications for a limited time period, you know, 3-4 days, and we try to transition them over to things like Tylenol, anti-inflammatories like Advil. And if you actually take 2 Tylenol and 2 Advil together, they almost work as well as Percocet in terms of pain relief. So we really do try to get people off of narcotics very quickly, and we have a real awareness of that. One of the questions that patients ask, though, is that how long before you become addicted? And is that something that's patient-dependent? Is it chemically-dependent? What do you tell your patients before, you know, you really run the risk of getting into addictive issues with people being given post-operative pain medications after surgery?
Yeah, and that's an important point also. A lot of people wonder about that. I have patients that won't take a single tablet for fear they're going to become addicted overnight. It actually does take time. How long it takes and how long that reverses after they are dependent on the medication is really genetically determined. It's something that can actually be tested for. But by and large, it's about 3 months of chronic use of an opiate medication or a benzodiazepine, a medication in the Valium family, that's going to start to cause some dependency. Keep in mind, there's a big difference between addiction and dependency, so we want to make sure that we keep our terminology correct. Dependency is a physiologic phenomenon. It's something that would happen to you, me, or anyone else that takes these medications for a long period of time. And that's characterized by a withdrawal syndrome, sort of an abstinence syndrome when the medication is abruptly stopped. Addiction is different. Addiction has to do with compulsive use of these medications despite harm, despite known harm, for a non-medicinal use. These medications are typically used that way for the psychic effects or getting high. Dependency is completely different. It's a reproducible physiologic effect that would occur with anyone. That effect, again, after about 3 months, people would start to experience. And patients worry about that. I've had patients that have had a post-op knee, for instance. I had a woman about a year and a half ago. She needed both sides done. Relatively young woman. She was in her late 40s, early 50s. And after the first knee replacement, she had a terrible time with postoperative pain, and she needed a prolonged course of opiate therapy. She was sent to me for that purpose, and we had her on fairly large doses of meds. They worked, and we weaned her slowly over the course of about 6 or 7 months. When she went to have her second side done, the same exact thing happened. But eventually, we weaned her off. We kept her closely monitored. She stayed safe. She did develop some dependency, but using the process of weaning, we were able to completely eliminate those medications, and she wound up doing fantastic.
So that's very hopeful, and that's very, very important. Also, I think one of the other problems with a lot of these medications also is the side effects that people get from them in terms of constipation and all these other issues in terms of, I think that staying away from them is obviously certainly the best thing. So patients that present to you that need pain medications, they have like acute low back pain or say chronic low back pain. How do you approach these? I mean, is this something where you try to use medications? Is it more physical therapy based, trigger point injections? I mean, what's your pathway in terms of managing people for the most part?
In pain management, we use something called a multidisciplinary approach, which is something I alluded to when we were talking about the definition. The multidisciplinary approach is taking advantage of modalities from different specialties. So from the physical specialties, physical therapy, occupational therapy, chiropractic, physical medicine, using other realms like the pharmacologic medication-based regimens. And there's lots of different medication categories out there other than narcotics that we can draw from to put together cocktails of medications that can lower pain and improve function. Interventional pain management, which is something that I specifically deal with, where there are many, many different types of injections that we do and minimally invasive procedures that we do to target pain conditions. We also use the biobehavioral aspect, things like biofeedback, guided imagery for patients that have an anxiety component to their pain or a depressive component to their pain. We use the Eastern methodologies like acupuncture, biologics, and of course, surgical. Not the first thing that a lot of patients with pain are going to be engaging in, but certainly surgical options are out there as well. So we use combinations from these different specialties and put together a regimen that works for a particular patient. To be sure, there are some patients, you take a young, healthy person with a fresh disc herniation, perhaps all they need is a few weeks of physical therapy and maybe an anti-inflammatory or perhaps a few epidural steroid injections. And they're going to get better, and that's probably the end of it. They'll do well thereafter and probably may not need much. If it's a large herniation, they may need surgery. But again, it's a discrete problem that they're going to get better from, and we may not see them again. Many of my patients, however, are like in COVID, long haulers. They're going to be with us for months, years, or maybe a lifetime. These are patients that have maybe multifactorial degenerative problems. Maybe it's going to be a shoulder arthritis or a chronically painful back from a variety of issues. Could be arthritis, could be spinal stenosis, which is narrowing of the spinal canal. But clearly, they're going to need continuing care over time. The most important thing when you send me a patient for pain management, I know there's a spine surgeon in your practice that I work with as well. When I get a referral for back pain, as with anything else, the most important thing is to figure out what the diagnosis is. Sometimes they come in and they're already fairly well diagnosed. They have a particular problem. Other times it's not so clear. Everything always starts off with a really good history, understanding the patient's description of what the pain is, how long, where it is, what it feels like, a good physical examination, and then testing, whether it's going to be imaging like x-rays or an MRI or neurological testing. The most important thing is to identify what the problem is so that can be specifically targeted.
I think that's certainly important. And I also think that getting a set of fresh eyes on a problem is also certainly very helpful. Once again, we're on the phone today with Dr. Craig Shalmy, who's a pain management specialist who works out of his office at 550 Mamaroneck Avenue at Suite 503. And you can reach Dr. Shalmy through his website at cshalmy, that's C-S-H-A-L-M-I, at treatingpain.com. His office is 914-873-8313. One of the things that we found is a lot of people are coming in asking us and asking me about the role of CBD and cannabis and cannabinoids in management of chronic pain. Whether it be taking things which have THC in it, which does have some mood-altering things, or just things which are more CBD products, which are not really mood-altering, but can be placed in creams and things like that. What's been your experience with that? Is that something that you're using and recommending to patients?
It's interesting that you would ask that you ask that question. A lot of people want to know whether or not CBD is effective. Well, there's THC and CBD, and I want to make the distinction. THC is from the cannabis plant, and within the flowering component of that plant is the active drug, THC. That's the drug that causes the high and the psychic effect, and that's used. That does have medicinal purposes. It's not legal in New York State without a medicinal purpose and a prescription card from a physician who prescribes that. CBD does not require a prescription. It is legal. It's sold everywhere, Steve. I'm finding it in my hardware store now. I mean, it's just ubiquitous. The question is, does it work? Let's just talk about CBD for a moment.
Okay.
CBD actually, well, let me ask you a question. What do you think? Do you have a sense of it one way or the other as to whether it works, or do you think it's just so much shin music?
Well, I mean, I was very curious about this. So we actually looked up and did a literature review on this and published an article on the role of CBD and cannabinoids in orthopedic issues. And I think that, you know, there's multiple receptors on these that basically the body actually does respond to. So I do think that there is some role for using CBDs in terms of treatment of various orthopedic issues. But I think the biggest trouble that we've seen in orthopedics, at least, has been the variability in the products. And that, you know, to your point, is that you find these in the drugstore, you find them at GNC, but you also find them in your drugstore and your hardware store and, you know, and like your hair salons. Everybody's using CBD at this point. And the question is that, you know, the products that you're getting, what is the percentage of CBD in it? What is the delivery system? Is it actually getting in through the skin, or is it just basically serving as a topical emollient or something they just rub on like Aspirin cream or Bengay? So I think that's the biggest variable.
That's a good point. It's not a regulated substance.
No, it's not regulated. I think it's very hard to tell what you're actually getting. But, you know, I do know that, I mean, there are patients, particularly the cancer patients, obviously, that do benefit from the use of cannabinoids in terms of helping with appetite suppression and appetite issues with some degree of pain. So I think that, you know, there is something to be said for it. I mean, I just don't know where it sort of fits in the multimodality component of treatment, and then when do you reach for that in terms of your options that go from injections to creams to, you know, to various other modalities? That's why I was curious what your thoughts are on this. What
I have a low threshold of advising patients to use that. I don't see any downsides to it, presuming that they're getting a legitimate preparation. Assuming that is the case, there is some neurophysiology behind this. There is the endocannabinoid system within our bodies, within the peripheral nervous system, the spinal cord, and even the brain. With even the brain, there is a receptor for this substance, and it's been shown. There are now some studies that show there is some efficacy, not just for pain, but also for anxiety, for depression, for relaxation. It seems to help with patients that have high stress and anxiety and pain as a result of that. So there definitely seems to be a role. Obviously, there's a lot of ongoing research, and we're going to learn more about it as time goes on. I think there's a little bit more definitive information about THC, and that is being used more widely. Certainly in pain management, we do see benefits with THC, but again, not for everyone. These are patients that have to be carefully, screened and carefully observed when they're on such a substance. And very important that we're not placing patients on THC at the same time that they're on opiates or other addictive medications.
Well, I think that's been one of the things which, and I know we're coming to the end of our show, and I'd love to have you back on the show at some point in the future. But you know, there's been actually some work looking at people that are using marijuana on a regular basis for whatever purpose, that if they do undergo anesthesia, for instance, for an orthopedic procedure, that they need something like 200 the times of anesthetic in order to keep them comfortable during the procedure. So, I mean, there is a real physiologic role to this stuff. So it's not completely benign, and I think certainly for patients that are coming in that do smoke or take on, you know, or take cannabis on a regular basis, please tell your doctor or your anesthesiologist if you are having a procedure. So just to sort of wrap this up, it's amazing how quickly that half hour goes. But again, we're very fortunate to have Dr. Craig Shalmy with us today, a pain management specialist. So in a nutshell, patients that basically have pain, when should they come and see you? Right at the outset, should they go see their primary physician first? How? What is the best way of reaching you? And again, what's the easiest way to go ahead and try to get to your office and get to see you?
Well, we take patients without referrals. Patients do not have to be referred necessarily by their primary care provider unless there's a requirement within their insurance plan that they do so. But we do take patients without referrals. And your point is well taken. It's important to get the pain earlier than later. I would much rather have a patient here that doesn't really need a chronic pain specialist or a pain management doctor at this point, and have them come back later. Well, but better be safe than sorry.
Again, Dr. Shalmy, thank you so much. Again, to reach Dr. Shalmy, 914-873-8313. This is Dr. Steven Zelikoff. Thank you again. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to all of you. And that's the end of our edition of Bone Talk.